his tone, no need for sound. Saxophone plays so smooth and true. Feel the vibe, it's all for you. It goes bounce on all the time.
Okay, we're recording. We're live. We are recording
now. You sure we're recording?
The funny part, just because we're restarting all of this. No, I mean, we're starting it because now it's just the beginning of this episode. But the funny thing is we've been talking for more than half an hour and I wasn't recording.
Sucks.
It does. It does because, yeah, you're right. We're not going to get that emotion. But, you know, we talked about something because in the middle of it, luckily we were not recording because in the middle of it, I have my beautiful wife just came in and she was just talking signs that I don't understand and then wanted like headphones and all of that. And we were going to talk just a little bit
totally
about that.
Totally disrupt everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's what
but
women do.
But luckily we like, because we're generous. We stayed, of course we delivered. We gave them what they wanted. But at the same time, we stayed in topic. So we were talking about Bigfoot because we had a conversation about that, like when we were having dinner. It's Christmas time. It's happy holidays again.
Or Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
It's Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
What is she signaling?
I have no idea. She you can say. Well, yeah, yes, we will do all of that. So thank you so much. Thank you, my producer. Yep. Yeah, so Jeff.
Johnny Carson.
Who are you?
I am Jeff. I am a retired correctional sergeant with Baltimore County. I have a business which is called Critter Crop Wildlife Control. I do volunteer work for a place called Friends of Jerusalem Mill, which a friend of mine, Kit Wattenberger and me, built a blacksmith school. We have a lot of history that goes on there. We're called the Mini Williamsburg, and we're open on weekends. And there's a lot of different activities that go on there, Civil War museums and 18th century jousting and 18th century baseball. We have a historical blacksmith. We have woodworkers. We have all kinds of things. We have school programs, a lot of different activities that go in there. We have a big mansion where they do different types of like tea settings and Prohibition era stuff in the basement with different liquors and just all kinds of stuff. Check out the website. A lot of stuff goes on the weekend. Nice destination to go to for the weekend.
Yeah, for a little getaway, and it's something that's like you can get educated.
Very much so.
Yeah, and yep. You can learn a lot, and you can taste a lot, and you can know and meet a lot of good people.
Yep, a lot of history.
Yeah, yeah. And we were talking about this matter because we started talking, especially when I told you that I can actually get all my equipment to wherever you are, for example, if you want to do it somewhere else. And we can definitely, like, whenever I will be recording this time, I promise you, I will be like on point. I really feel bad about that.
We had some really good stuff there.
We got really good stuff. So we hit Bigfoot because we were talking about Bigfoot, and I said, I don't believe in Bigfoot. My neighbor, Laura, she was saying her theory is that every picture of it, of barefoot, whether it's a man or a woman, it was just blurry every single time. Maybe it's not the picture. Maybe it's Bigfoot himself or herself. Blurry people. That can happen. But at the same time, we got to an experience that you had in Maine when you went hunting.
You just want to go right to that.
Oh,
huh?
I love that. I love that because, I'm sorry I'm going to have you repeat it, but it was so fascinating to me because, and I'll explain why it's fascinating. So you were in Maine, and what happened and you went black bear hunting.
Uh-huh. I took my father black bear hunting because my father always wanted to do a black bear hunt. They lived in Florida, so flew him up. We drove from Maryland to Maine, loaded everything in the truck, and went to an outfitter up there, past Bangor, and got everything set up. And we did 1 or 2 days. We had 5 days that we were doing hunting there. And we did 1 or 2 days. I really didn't see anything on the first stand that I was at. My father had videoed because I'd bought him a GamePro that he could video stuff from his gun. Mm-hmm. He caught one on video. I wanted to – the rifle I was using, the stands they originally had me on were set up for bow hunting. And they were like anywhere from 20 to 30 yards. And my rifle, which had a big round to it, it's a 45-70, I wanted to be further away because I wanted the round to be able to do the damage it needed to do and put the animal down humanely.
Okay.
At 20 or 30 yards, I just felt the bullet would just go through and wouldn't impact the animal like it needed to.
Okay.
So I asked them if they put me in a stand that was further away. And they took me to a stand that was, I think it was roughly about 50, 60 yards away from the feeding stations. And in Maine, you can actually bait bear. And they bait them with whatever, corn, donuts, whatever they want to put in the barrels and stuff like that. It's legal to do up there. Not my favorite type of hunting.
Okay.
But it was for my father. Was okay. Where we went. I kind of like just doing off the cuff. I like to do walking through the woods, do a lot of tracking and stuff like that. But he needed to sit up in the stand. So I'm sitting there and it started getting dark and, a mother and two cubs came through and they were sitting there eating and she's knocking the barrel over for them. And you can hear the cubs. You can actually hear the cubs just gorging themselves. They're going, just gorging themselves on the food. And it got dark and I started getting out of the stand. They kind of took off and I called the guide up and I said, look, I'm getting out of my stand. You know, where are you at? He says, I'm about a half hour away. I'm just starting to pick people up. I said, okay, great. I'll meet you at the drop off spot. So now it's dark. It started raining. I'm walking through the field and the place I had to go was probably about 75 to 100 yards from my stand out into the middle of the field. And one of the things always sits in the back of your mind is the guide says, you know, be careful walking through open fields because the moose just run right through. Then they don't even care if you're there or not. They're going to run you over.
And they're very territorial.
Yes. Yeah. And if they're running, you might as well get out of the way or lay on the ground.
Absolutely.
So I'm standing there and it started raining really hard. So I got my back towards the rain. The wind's blowing. So obviously all the scent and everything is blowing away from me. And I'm kind of curled up inside my jacket and I got a light on my head. I've got a headlamp on and just kind of scanning the field out in front of me. And I start hearing this clicking noise behind me. And like any hunter knows that's hunted black bear before, when you start hearing clicking, that's the black bear clicking his jaw because it's warning you that it's there. It don't like what's going something. On. Yeah. So the rain's really, really blowing now, and I kind of turn my head a little bit, and I'm looking, and I can see it paralleling me to my left. And I get on the phone, and I call the guy, and I said, look, I said, I got a bear that's paralleling me. What do you want me to do? And he said, just start talking to it or something, yelling at it, do whatever. I was like, okay. So I'm like, hey, bear, get out of here, bear. How you doing, bear? Leave me alone, bear, you know, whatever. Because it's at dark, you can't shoot. You can't discharge your weapon.
It's against the law.
It's against the law to kill a bear after dark. So, you know, this is going through my head, all right? You know, am I going to get arrested if I have to shoot this thing? You know, what's going to be the ramifications for this thing if it charges me or whatever?
Yeah, I don't want to lose my life, but at the same time, I don't want to do something that can, if I stay alive.
So the bear, I kind of turn a little bit more, and he still don't know what I am because all my scent is being blown away from him. He can't figure out what I am. So I kind of turn around and I face him, and he, you know, it leads into what we were talking about earlier with Bigfoot. You know, I understand why people might mistake a Bigfoot with a bear or vice versa, because when he stood up, you know, the shadow from a light, it looked like he was about 8 foot tall. It was a big bear. I can't tell you exactly how big it was, but I know it was a big bear, and it stood up. So I turned around. And now all this stuff is going through my head because, you know, they train you about when a bear stands up, you got to shoot lower because all the vitals drop. And this bear is sitting there clicking his jaws. And I bring the weapon up and he's just kind of moving his head back and forth like he's trying to see around my headlamp. He can't see me because I got the light right in his face. So he's moving back and forth, kind of like a rapper would with his head or something. He's just kind of moving back and forth trying to look around the light. And I'm holding the gun up and I'm like, okay, bear, neither one of us want this. What's going to happen here? And just about then the guide pulled up over the top of the hill and he had a loud muffler or something. and the bear dropped and took off back down towards the stand where I was originally at. So
this story is just fascinating because for many reasons. First of all, you kept your cool, and that is amazing to me. And that shows how capable you are capable to manage your emotions, especially in the panic. Because I would have panicked.
Oh, I was panicking a little bit.
I would have been running, yelling, not me. You know, I was take my clothes off, do something. But just being able to remember that, okay, first of all, I have to stay calm. Second, I'm going to make a call. Third, I know that I can't really shoot any bear after because it's against the law. And even during that moment, you remembered that, oh, there's a law actually. I can't really shoot it because there are regulations and all of that. So there is a respect there for that animal and also for the local laws, because you're not from Maine, but at the same time, you respect that.
Yep.
Doing all of that, and again, we talked
about seconds. In seconds.
And at the same time, you are at risk. At that moment, that animal, because you don't know what they can do, it can just jump at you. Mm-hmm. And staying calm, staying cool, and keeping your cool, and going through that, and making those decisions, I'm sure it takes experience, but it takes muscle memory that we talked about, and it takes you know exactly the material that you have, and you know how to use it, and you know how to stay calm and how to react in those moments. And I think that because you're trained, because you did a lot of that, that really helped you. But remembering it at that moment, I don't know if I would have actually remembered that.
Well, anymore. I mean, I've been hunting since I've been basically 10 years old. Growing up, I've always been around firearms, so it's always a thing, that's, you can never get that bullet back. So it's, you gotta be careful where it goes. When you're shooting, even when you're hunting, you still have those things going through your mind, because if you're hunting from a stand, typically you're, anywhere from 12, 15 to 20, me, I'm 25 feet up in the air. You have to make sure your backdrop, where is that bullet going to go if it goes through the animal? So, if you're out in the middle of the woods, you're, depending on where you're at, you're kind of okay to be level on the ground if you got tree backdrops and stuff like that. But you don't know what other hunters might be back there and everything.
It's going to land somewhere.
Right. When you're up in a tree, you know pretty much you got an angle, degree, it's going to go into the ground.
Yeah.
Bow hunting's a different story. You don't have the distance that you do with a rifle, shotgun,
like that. And there are pounds for each, there are different bows. There's a 20 pounds,
there's guidelines.
Yeah, can you tell me a little?
There's guidelines on how many poundage you can use for certain animals.
Okay.
So deer and bear, since they have thicker fur and skin and stuff like that, the poundage is higher. What it is, I don't remember right now, because it changes. Maryland changes their laws every year. It's just crazy. The guidelines and the laws change so much. Just like with rifles, Harford County, Baltimore County, you can't use rifles. Harford County, I think you can use cartridge rifles, which means it's basically a brass casing with a primer in the back of it, kind of like a big shotgun shell.
Okay.
But in Baltimore County, you can only use shotgun, like a slug.
Okay.
You can't use any type of rifle barrel. So each county kind of has their own guidelines as far as what type of weapon you can use. Then you can only use certain weapons at certain times of the year. When you're turkey hunting, there's only a certain load that you can use for turkey hunting.
Okay.
You're not supposed to be using any type of lead. Is anybody using any type of lead for a round these days? It's against the law.
Okay. Okay.
Lead poisoning, possible lead poisoning.
For the animal, whatever you're going to eat, for example, it can actually affect you.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the best time of the year to hunt? For example, white turkey? Because we were talking about how delicious is white turkey.
Probably in the fall, because they've been eating all summer long.
Okay.
And they've got a lot of a lot of different meat and fat and muscle and stuff like that. Coming in spring, you're coming off of, and again, I have to remember. I don't remember exactly what it is, but in I think it's in fall you can only hunt. You can't hunt hens in the spring.
Okay.
Because they're giving birth, they're sitting on eggs and stuff like that.
Okay.
Gobblers you can hunt both fall and spring, and then there's only certain times you can hunt them up till 12 o'clock. In certain counties, you can only hunt till 12 o'clock. But turkeys are very fun. Very difficult because you got to learn how to call. There's different types of calls out there. You know, they're very, they can see very well.
And they can respond to the calls?
Oh, yes. They can respond to the call. It's when you're sitting there in the morning, the sun just comes up and you start hitting that call or you do a mouth call and a turkey answers back. It's like, oh, I got him.
Mouth call.
I got
him. Are you serious?
Yeah. It's like a diaphragm fits in your mouth and you got to like push your tongue up against it and you got to learn how to do different types of calls with it and stuff.
That's phenomenal. I gotta look that up.
Yeah,
I've never seen it. Yeah,
I used to do it at work all the time. I used to get a diaphragm and just sit there and so I practice all the time. I would just sit there and practice. And what the hell?
How many times a year do you go for like trips, like hunting trips?
I used to do a lot, but most of it was out in Garrett County.
Okay.
I used to go out for every season. I used to go out for turkey season. I used to go out for black powder, bow, rifle. I used to do it all year long. I'd take off, you know, 3 or 4 days at a time. I mean, ask her. I mean, she loved when I left because I'd be gone and, you know,
for many days
during, really? You know, come September, you know, well, back then the bow season started September 18th, I think it was. Now it's September 9th. But, you know, I'd be gone for a week for bow season and then turkey season would come up. And then black powder season would come up, and then rifle season would come up, and then turkey season would come back up again. So
it's
yeah,
like football season and baseball season and hockey season.
It was. That's what it was.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And even though I wouldn't get nothing, it was just going out.
It's not about actually getting anything. It's just about the experience.
It's part of it. I mean, it's part of it. But when you're
and you're never alone when you're doing it, so you're always with a lot of people, so you really experience. Or just the people that are close to you.
It was in the beginning. I had a lot of people I went to work with. We would go out and go hunting.
All right.
But they all started retiring and moving away and stuff like that. And then it was me and my brother. And then he actually just, his hunting was going out on his back porch with a Pop-Tart and a cup of coffee, sitting on the deck. And he would shoot a deer and send me a picture of it. And then
in his backyard.
In his backyard. And he's, you know, because, you know, then he's sending me a picture of him dragging it out and going to the processor.
Oh my God.
So, you know, that was his hunting. But it got to the point where I was going by myself. You know, I'd go out and I think the last time I hunted was when I just got a new suit. It was a suit that I bought up in Harrisburg. And because I always get cold in my feet and my hands. And this suit was almost like a sleeping bag, but you can put your arms out of it. Stuff. Okay. I can't remember. A heater suit. It's like a heater suit. It's what it's called.
It's not super thick and you still can move around.
Yeah, you can still move around and stuff.
Yeah, and it's,
so
it's
it just like contained your heat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was up in the tree stand and I put it on. It wasn't that cold when I put it on. And I'm all comfy and, you know, next thing I know, I'm just sound asleep. Uh-huh. And you know, wake up and there's a bunch of does that are walking by and stuff. And I didn't get nothing, but I went to take that thing off and it was like the temperature had dropped like 30 degrees.
Oh, my God.
It was like 20 degrees below or 20 degrees. And it was just super cold. And I was like, oh, my God, it's just so cold. And
I can only imagine, like, deer's walking by. You're like, oh, he's asleep.
He's asleep, exactly.
He's okay.
No. And a lot of hunters do it. It's really, ain't no, if a hunter tells you, oh, I don't fall asleep in the woods, he's lying his ass off.
Because it's so serene. It's so nice and quiet. And it's just you. You just, like, fall in love with that.
Yep.
And then just, like, get comfortable.
Yep.
And you fall asleep.
Just get up there and fall asleep.
I do it right in that corner every day.
It was really freaky. You know, we talk about noises in Bigfoot. This is making me flash back to a couple things. We were I was up in a tree stand. This is the same storyline. I don't know if you want me to tell it or not about
Please.
My captain.
Oh, I want to hear every story.
I had a captain. He had a stand called a loggy lounger or lounge chair or something like that. And it was really weird because you kind of laid in it, but it had this really big front to it. And he was like probably 50 yards away. And Next thing I look over, and all I see is a white ass sticking out, and he's just dropping trow, and he had to go to the bathroom. And when you see feces drop 25 yards and hit the ground, it's like, okay, now I've seen it all in the
dedication.
Woods. Dedication.
Like, exactly, he's right. Saying, like, he's a sniper at that point. Like, he's a Marine Corps. he's on a mission.
And he was a dedicated hunter, too. He still is, actually. He still is.
How many hours can he stay there, for example?
I mean, we stay all day.
Wow.
We stay all day. I mean, most of the time you might come in for lunch or something, but you're going right back out just to kind of get out of there and walk around and stuff.
What do you think people can learn from it?
From hunting?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Patience is a big thing. I mean,
something we lack now.
Yes. Patience is huge, because you've got to, I mean, when you're there's so much prep to it, you've got to, you've got to scout your area. You got to make sure what you're hunting is in the area. You're looking for feces, and you're looking for tracks, and you're looking for trails, and you're looking for rubs, and you're looking for, when it comes to deer, all that kind of stuff. When it comes to turkey, you're looking, same thing, you're looking for scat. You're looking for scratches in the ground. But it's just doing a lot of research first. That's where a lot of people fail. They just go into the woods and think something's going to walk past them.
Intelligence. Gathering intelligence.
Yeah. You're basically just doing a lot of scouting.
Yeah.
And then getting up in the tree stand. And we talked about this earlier too. I mean, my father, my first hunting trip, we went to Westminster, and there's old time hunters out there. And he was one of those old time hunters. You'd go up, you'd get in an old wooden stand, and you know, he's in jeans and a jacket, and he's smoking a cigarette and talking, and he'd get the biggest deer at coming through the woods, just walk right in front of him. And you know, there's people, I go out and spend thousands of dollars for equipment, and I sit in the woods for 5 days and I don't see nothing. This man goes out smoking, you know, smoke billowing out of the tree stand,
2 minutes
in the woods, and he's got the biggest deer in the woods right now. So yeah, it's crazy.
Well, there are some people that have it without actually putting a lot of effort. There are a lot of people that need to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with equipments, having the right equipments. Like, for example, if I want to actually now start and go, like, as a beginner, for example,
mm-hmm.
what's the minimum that I need?
Practice with a rifle first, depending on what you're going to hunt. Before you buy anything, to make sure you're comfortable with shooting.
Okay.
Because if you're not comfortable with shooting, say I was a range instructor, a firearm instructor, and a self-defense instructor with Baltimore County. And teaching people to shoot firearms is it's difficult, because when you're standing there and you're trying to teach somebody how to discharge a firearm, and they have a fly going around their head and they're waving a gun around like a fly swatter, that's dangerous. What you've got to build into people. Oh, you know, this is a weapon, so you've got to be comfortable with it. You got to be able to handle it. You got to have the muscle memory, which is a big people. It's a big thing, and you keep repeating it. But muscle memory is so true with this. But getting
with anything,
getting comfortable with shooting is the first thing before you spend any money.
Yeah.
You know, and depending on what you're going to be hunting is going to be depending on what you're going to hunt with. And if you're going to start off with hunting, I would probably say you want to start off with anybody would be a 22, because it has no recoil to it. It's loud, and it's going to start building. You're going to start building up a resistance to what's going on in the whole process.
Okay.
The loudness, the noise is what kind of shakes people, because you don't want to flinch when you're trying to or anticipate, you know, by pulling the trigger from left to right or jumping the trigger or something along those lines. And then you graduate to a bigger gun that's going to give you a little bit more recoil, you know, 223, 243. Then you get, you know, 30-30s, 35, you know, you just keep going up in caliber.
Gradually,
you know, somebody that has a lot of guns, you can go from a 22 to maybe a 30-30 to a shotgun.
But 22 is the best way to start. For a starter, who never shot a gun, someone who never used anything. So practice first.
Practice.
Be safe.
Yep.
Get comfortable with because it's a beast.
Yep.
And it's something that really can either injure someone or even go to kill someone.
Yep.
So that you get familiar with it, be aware of it, just build that knowledge about like what you're going to be using, know how to use it.
Yep. And then, you know, the targets, you can start off with regular targets, but then you might want to go to like actual targets that look like the animal. So you know where you're going to be hitting it at, and where you're going to shoot, what it's going to look like. And you kind of have that muscle memory with your eye to muscle the finger, eye, all that, so you know what you're going to be hitting.
Yeah. And you got to know how to aim for something, like, like you where to shoot. And again, learning how to, like just like with the bear, for example, you know that when they stand up, you got to aim lower because they're everything drops. So that building knowledge about like the animals that you will be hunting is very crucial when you're doing it and how you're doing it, because again, that bullet will have to land somewhere. You don't want it to land on a different hunter.
For example, you're representing everything. I mean, you're the representative for all the other hunters. So, you know, if you make that mistake, and people make that mistake every year, I mean, there's hunters get killed because the person shooting the gun just is stupid. it's just stupid, you know.
And there are so many of those.
I mean,
around us, unfortunately.
We hear something on the news and, you know, it's like, I already know what he did wrong. You know, I know exactly what they did wrong because I can pick it out. You know, we see stuff on TV with the police and stuff. It's like, I yell at the TV because I'm yelling at the officers because I know what they're doing wrong.
But you know, it's not just the officers, like it's everyone.
It is like everyone. But there is training involved. There's a lot of training. The training has been. See, we can go into a whole nother thing. I don't want to get into it. Going to go a rabbit hole. You know, because you know, when it comes to training, you know, I'm just so on it. But
yeah,
getting back to the hunting, you know, then you got to get comfortable with. Getting like up, if you're going to do tree hunt, stand hunting, or if you're going to do blind hunting, either one, you got to practice from that area. So if you're blind hunting, most of the time you're sitting down. So you got to be able to sit down and shoot. If you're up in a tree stand, you got to be able to figure out, you know, your angle, you know, what are you going to be, how you're going to be shooting, what you're
laying down,
backdrop, or, all that kind of stuff. And then comfortable, you know, what are you going to wear? You got to, because usually when I'm going in, I'm walking in about, sometimes it was as close as 75 yards from the house.
Okay.
Other times it might have been a mile and a half. So what are you going to carry in
with you?
Yeah. You know, because you don't want to wear a lot of clothes in the wintertime. You got to carry it all with you.
And you want to be able to move.
So you don't want to be sweating with all these clothes on, because then you're going to freeze out there. So you got to carry all your clothes in with you. You get to the stand, you got to set everything up, you got to try to put some clothes on, climb up, and then the hard part is getting all your good clothes on while you're 25 feet up in the air and trying to balance on a tree stand and get all this stuff situated. So,
now you're telling me all this, and I'm reimagining the guy who was actually like turd just dropping like 25 feet from the top. Like, what was he wearing? Like, how many layers did he?
That's another one too, because I've done that one. I have. You know, I'm a big guy, so my tree stand, I bought this tree stand called a Big Shot, and the company's no longer around. They sold out. I can't remember what it's called now, but it was like the best heavy-duty tree stand for a guy my size. And so I was up at my brother's house, and I was probably about, I don't know, probably about 500 yards from his house up in a cherry tree. And a cherry tree, if anybody knows what a cherry tree is, it looks like the bark is very... big and bulky, and it breaks away very easily. And I don't know why I got up in it, but it was sitting right on the corner of a couple pathways. So I climb up, I'm climbing up, and I got about 20 feet up. And it's when you're like, when you're climbing anything, you should have 3 points of contact. And somehow I went to stand up, because when you go up in a climber, you lift your feet up, you lock it in, then you lift the top up, you lock it in, you pull up. It's like a seesaw. Okay,
it's a constant. Until you get to the top of it.
Somewhere on the lines, in between the two, I lost a step, and the bottom fell, and you have those two tied together, and my hands had come off the top stand for I don't remember how it happened, but when the bottom one fell, it pulled the top one. And they just teeter tottered straight down the tree.
Oh yeah, I can see it.
So
okay.
I grabbed the tree and it didn't. I lasted like 3 seconds, and I just started sliding down the tree and fell. Unfortunately, my stand had lined up exactly right. I fell through the top one and hit the bottom one, and it sprung me back out of the thing. And I'm laying there, and I'm just like,
how many feet?
It was about 20 feet.
Oh my God.
And I'm laying there, and I'm like, all right, toes are wiggling, fingers are wiggling.
All right, I'm still alive. Moving. I'm breathing.
My face has got scratches all on it. My neck is,
because you were holding the tree.
I was holding the tree. And I was like, all right, I'm getting up. Everything's working.
It's part of the experience.
Left everything there, gun, everything. I walked back to the house. I walked in. My brother said, what the hell happened to you? I said, I'm going, just leave me alone. I fell out of a tree stand. And he went up and got my stuff. And but I got back in the tree, you know.
Yeah.
It got back
I
mean, in.
Yeah. I can take you out of the, like, you can get injured. I can take you out of that context, but you'll get right back at it. Because it's something, it's more than just something that you do to have fun. It's something that, like, within your personality, it's mm-hmm. a habit that you've built, like, over the years. You enjoy doing it, but you love doing it. And you like doing it. Mm-hmm. You know the language of it. You know, when you master something, it's always, there's something about it. Mm-hmm. And you develop that over the years. So you've been doing it since you were 10 years old. It's hard for me now to start. I mean, I can start, but it's going to take a little while for me.
Yeah.
Because 10 years old, you can actually know how to shoot and develop that. Like, as you're growing, you're building your muscles, you're building your strength and all that. Like, for me now, like, it's like, I'm in, probably that little edge now. I'm like edging down, like my strength is going down. So getting to know and learn all about that, I don't know how much I can learn about it, but I it's definitely something that really interests me, and I would love to actually get into it. Now, knowing the language, that will take me a little while, because...
Do you have permission to do it?
From who? We're talking about who here? The government or the local government
of the house? The local government of the house.
Of course. Not. No, she always... Well, she was the one actually who's telling me, because not too far from us here, there's a shooting range that we have here in Baltimore County.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pushing me to go, to take some time. I just don't have time to do it. I work. My schedule is crazy. Like the moment I have some time, of course, my local government always has something scheduled.
Do.
Yeah. I gotta, like, either it can go from like laundry to like something like fix the patio or something.
Catch the groundhogs.
Yeah, something. Catch the groundhog. And we caught the whole family. But is there anything coming up soon, like as far as trips, hunting trips?
There's not. I mean, I haven't. I've talked to my brother. We've talked about doing a turkey hunt. We've went down and did a fishing. We went on a fishing charter, but that's probably the only thing we've really done, which was a good time. I'm not a big fishing person,
okay.
But you know, as long as somebody else has the tackle, I'll go out and throw a line out. It's just a whole nother realm of having to buy stuff. I mean, it's just like goose hunting.
Oh,
it's a whole nother realm. It's a different world. I mean, it's goose hunting is totally different from regular hunting. It's different equipment, different, you know, so it's they're all have their own different niches, I guess I'll say.
Yeah. I love fishing up until we went to Key West. So it's a great story. With like my in-laws were there, and we got to the boat at 6:30 a.m.
Was this a charter?
Yeah, so many people, and there was a good friend of mine who is no longer with us, unfortunately. But he brought us. He went to 7-Eleven and got two pills. Apparently, they're really good. Like when you're in the boat. And those were the last two pills. So as good as I was nice. I was like, oh, you can take one, but I'll give the other one to my father-in-law. I don't know how it's going to be out there, but I might get sick. But I would rather actually get sick than my father-in-law get sick. We went. I got so sick, man. I got so sick. And everybody was like, look at the horizon. I'm like, I've been looking at the horizon for the last 30 minutes. It's not getting any better. And it only takes that first person. So there was that first person that did it. And like after that, I got so sick. And then 10 people after me who got sick. I was so happy when we came back. And we didn't, like, my father-in-law did not speak much English. So when he was talking to Christine afterwards, he told her, I didn't need that pill because I'm okay with it. I'm like, I could have died in that boat.
And you're telling me right now, like, he was like, yeah, I didn't know that what kind of bill it was. So I just took it. But it was, that was my last one. Now, like, I see a boat, I'm like, oh, I don't know.
I say the same thing because when we went,
it was awful.
I mean, I worked for a commercial waterman, and I started working for a commercial waterman when I was 15 years old.
Okay.
With Don's Crabs.
Okay.
And I worked on the boat, started off eeling, and then we started off crabbing.
Okay.
And I mean, we'd get out in the bay, and you know, 5-6 foot waves was fun back then, you know, but I got on this boat and we started heading out. I started thinking about what I had for breakfast,
like
bacon and eggs. And for some reason, man, it just, and I was the first one to go. I was chumming. I was the first one chumming.
You were the first person.
Yep.
It only takes that. I'm telling you, like they were right when they said it. It's like, it only takes that first person. And you can see people laughing, like the captain and all of that. They're like, all right, so we're going to have a nice ride today. Yep. Like a lot of people will be puking.
We're going to have a lot of fish around us.
That's literally what, like, they, because when you puke, as if you bring it, because you're puking outside, and people are just like, the moment, and that was fascinating to me. I've never seen something like that before, because you just throw that, and you capture it immediately. You just catch something immediately. It's fun. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I've never seen something like that, but it's fun that, like, when we were puking, there were like 10 of us puking from that. Like people, you can see like fishes just coming and gathering.
Yeah,
like,
the seagulls come in and everything's having a feast.
Yeah, yeah. And then when her father caught a big grouper, but we couldn't keep it because it wasn't grouper season. So we were not allowed to keep it. And you can take me out of Morocco, but you can't take Morocco out of me. I was like, all right, can we work something out here? Can we talk about something? Hey, no one should know. He's my father-in-law. He's like, yeah, dude, yeah, this is America. We're not going to do this here. There's no, like, it's not me. It's them.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to take this back, and they're going to take my license. I'm going to lose everything. It's going to change my life. We're going to throw that grouper back. And that was it. But yeah, after that, I don't know if I'm ready to go back fishing. It's going to take me a little while.
Yeah.
So if I see a bear out there.
You see a bear out in the water. And...
Actually, not the water, but like if I see a bear when I go hunting, I don't think I'm gonna go back hunting anytime soon.
I mean, I've seen deer out in the bay. I mean, we've had deer swimming across the bay, going across from Pool Island to going across over to the Eastern Shore. So
really,
yeah, they'd be swimming, just going across the
deer
water.
Deer swimming,
yeah.
Wow.
But
wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of. I mean, every hunter is going to have his own stories, and it's.
There's so many stories, man.
Oh, like there is. I mean, I can just sit. I mean, the one captain, we were turkey hunting, and it was gobbler season. So, when you're hunting for gobblers, you have to. They have to have the beard has to be so long,
in order for you to in order get for them. You to yeah, keep, they're grown.
And how did this story go? He. We were all coming in. We heard a shot, and he was the only person that was in that area that could have shot. And he came into camp, and we said, "Well, what happened? Did you shoot? We heard somebody shoot." Oh, I just reminded him of another story too. Sorry.
Yeah, I need to hear all of them.
This one, the other one's gonna be. But he's like. He's kind of got that look on his face. And it's like, all right, we know you shot something. What did you shoot? And, well, I shot a bird. Well, where is it? Well, I buried it back over there.
Why?
He thought he had shot a hen because you couldn't shoot hens.
And it wasn't the season.
And it wasn't the season. But it was a gobbler. But he had shot the beard off and didn't realize it.
Oh.
So he thought he had shot. It. Yeah, because the colors were really weird and stuff like that. So he was like, so... But
he was so good that he actually
when you shoot it's not but shot that comes out, so you're shooting it, so it's a lot of pellets going at the bird, so you try to hit from the head because you don't want to shoot the body,
okay,
you don't want to mess up
you
want to
eat it. Yeah.
But we were in West Virginia. This is the coyote one. We were in West Virginia with a friend of mine, my old lieutenant, and his dad has property in West Virginia, has over 100 acres, and we were turkey hunting, And he was up on one side of the mountain. I was up on the other. Another guy was down further on the other side of the mountain. And we were all supposed to meet in the center on the top of the mountain at a certain time. I didn't see nothing. But he had, I heard him calling. And he was using his turkey call. And he's really good at mouth calls. So he was doing mouth call and box calling. And heard a shot. Okay, he must have got something. And then heard another shot. I was like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. Did he miss?
Back to back?
Back to back. Maybe. So me and the other guy, we meet. And here comes John walking down with a coyote across his back. And he gets in and he takes it and he throws it across the four-wheeler. And, you know, comes over. And we said, what happened? He goes, man, I was making this call. And this coyote just charged out of the woods at me. He said he thought he was a turkey. He was just charging right at him, come right across the field.
Wow.
And he had to shoot twice to try to knock it down. So we're sitting there talking.
They're vicious, man.
They can be.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're sitting there talking, and next thing you hear is
still alive. The last.
And it's doing this on the four-wheeler. I'm like, what the hell is that? And we always call it the ghost of the mountain now. And he goes over and he goes, this thing's still alive. And he was carrying it on his back.
Oh, my God.
Bringing it down. That was the whole funny part about it.
Just scared it.
Just, he must have knocked it out or something. But, yeah, we had to finish it off because it was hurt and stuff. But,
yeah,
it was just crazy. It's just one of them crazy stories that you have. So.
Those coyotes never die. How many lives did
it? It's like, you know, carry a whole coyote, you know, 300 yards through the woods on your back and you don't know the thing's alive.
Yeah, I think it was just unconscious.
Just unconscious? Yeah. I don't know what happened. He rolled it somewhere, hit it and something.
Got scared. Got so scared it fainted. Well, can you just remind everyone about where you volunteer?
Friends of Jerusalem Mill. It's in Kingsville, Maryland, off of Jerusalem Road, 2807 Jerusalem Road. We have a covered bridge. Check out the website, Friends of Jerusalem Mill. There's a lot of activities on there, a lot of stuff that goes on. Like I said, we have the big mansion. They do. What did I call it earlier? Prohibition era.
Oh, yes.
Stuff in their basement. Yeah. Tastings. I have a gentleman comes in. He does prohibition drinks. She just did making wreaths. They do soap making. They do tea. They do different types of teas. They have different type of speakers come in. They have arts people come in. They sell a lot of artwork. We have the mill, the woodworkers. We have the blacksmith school. We teach blacksmithing. 1 weekend a month, you can reach out to me, and that's a 2-day course. It's $250 for the 2-day course, and it's the beginning of blacksmithing. So there's a lot that goes on there.
Right. So. Right. And I would love to be part of it one day. I'll definitely make that call. Thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank
you. This was cool.
Sorry again for the first time. I'm so happy now. I see that red light there.
Yep, it's
recording. Thank you, ladies, for being with us here. We're wrapping this up. Until the next time, sir.
Yep. Politics.
In the cellar we gather round. Stories told, no need for sound. Saxophone plays so smooth and true. Feel the vibe, it's all for you. Echoes bounce on walls of time. Hear the rhythm, hit the rhyme. Down below in our quiet space, find your voice in this safe place.